been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Thursday end of the quarter. That's right, because tomorrow the market is closed. It's the end of the quarter edition of the Best Stocks Now show with the professional money manager, Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. And we've got kind of a flattish close to the quarter so far going on. The NASDAQ is up 12 points, which puts it at 16,409, just a hair under its all-time high. Of 16,428, so it's 19 points under its all-time high. The S&P hit a new all-time high yesterday, and it's adding on 5 points today. So, hey, it would be nice to close the quarter on an all-time high, 52.54. I've never said that before on the S&P 500. That is a new all-time high. The Dow is up 15. To 39,774, and that puts it very close to an all-time high, which is 39,781. Just 13 points below its all-time high. The small caps are up a little bit. Crude oil is up $1.03 to 82.38. Gold, new all-time high. All-time high on gold, 22.29. And the 10-year is at 4.21%. So welcome to the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And today we'll end the Q1 2024. And if we hold these little gains that we've got right now, the S&P will close the quarter at an all-time high, and the Dow and the NASDAQ just a hair under their all-time high. So a pretty good start to the year. Let's just take a look and see where we're at year to date. The S&P 500 up about 8% for the first quarter of 2024. The NASDAQ... the NASDAQ, actually I don't have that number, I thought I did. We'll have to check that later. But anyways, the NASDAQ's had a good quarter. The Dow has had, a so-so quarter. It's been mostly tech and AI that has led the way here in 2024. What will the next quarter bring?
NASDAQ's up 9.2% for the quarter.
Yeah, okay, so I had it right. I thought it was up more than that. We've done a heck of a lot better than that.
That's the odd piece. I mean, when you look at it, obviously looking back, I feel like the NASDAQ would be up year to
21% or something.
Yeah, more than 9.21%, but it's been, stock-specific risk, and it's been individual stocks that have outperformed versus, say, an index.
Well, we've been very fortunate in this first quarter of the year to have been in the right places at the right time. And, I went over the top five performers in the S&P 500 yesterday, and those are five of our biggest holdings. So we happen to have all five. It has been a pretty narrow advance, really, when you look at the indexes. We've done a whole heck of a lot better than the indexes. Gold closed at an all-time high yesterday. What's going on there? I don't know. The forward PE of the S&P 500 also closed at an all-time high yesterday. Not all-time high, but 52-week high. 21.55. And just to put that in perspective, we had a giddy move in the S&P back in 2020. It ended in early 2021 when the forward PE got to 23. And, you know, that was really extreme, and we had almost zero interest rates at that time. Now we're sitting at 4.2, and to have a forward PE that's closing in on 22, something has to give. You just don't know when that is going to happen. U.S. GDP growth revised up to 3.4%, so hence the soft landing. We're not in a recession. And the Fed's draconian rate hikes did not put us there. So that is the very definition of a soft landing.
Yeah, and weekly jobless claims come in at 210,000 again this week, which is, I think, 2,000 less than expected. So, jobs continue to be strong on that side of the equation. So it's kind of hard to have a big slowdown in the economy when people were still working.
Yeah, I mean, it'll show up in jobless claims first. That's why we look at that number every Thursday. And if you remember, Volcker, the Fed chairman back in the late 70s when inflation was running almost 20%, he had to put the economy into a recession. He had a much more difficult problem to deal with. This has been the second worst that I've seen in my lifetime, where we were running hot, where we got up into double digits, 10% there for a while. The unfortunate thing that nobody really talks about is we still are suffering from the results of that inflation. I mean, it's like a stair step. And we're not going back downstairs, I don't think. We've now hit levels that we've never seen on pricing and a lot of different items that I don't think are coming down anytime soon. It would take a pretty severe recession to put us into a deflationary spiral to start bringing those prices down. It would take demand destruction, right, Barry? I mean, people would have to stop buying or not have enough money to go to McDonald's or to buy ribeye steaks or to buy butter lettuce or romaine lettuce or whatever the case may be, and they'd have to start lowering prices. That would also take wages down. And I don't see that anytime soon. It seems to me like we're stuck with these prices for a long, long time.
Well, I mean, you think about it. You know, I think about my parents, right? Talking, you know, 5 cent Coke, right? Or you know, you go down to the store and you know, 15 cents would get you this, that, and the other. And of course, goods prices. It seems that they never really truly come down, right? Certainly not. Your day-to-day, you know, particularly things you put in your mouth, right?
Oh.
You've certainly seen deflation and, you know, some household furnishings and other things that are more of a long-term deal. It's no different than, you know, importing a lot of that stuff from China, right, where it brought prices down. But in terms of your day-to-day items, particularly on the food side, I don't know if there's really a precedent for food inflation really going down.
No, yeah, candy bars aren't coming down anytime soon with cocoa prices beating NVIDIA and Bitcoin so far this year. That's unbelievable.
That's a good stat. Throw different things in there.
My wife was headed to get goodies to fill the Easter eggs for our annual grandkid Easter egg hunt. And I'm sure she'll get a little sticker shock when she prices some of those chocolate eggs when she goes to the supermarket. The S&P has notched 21 record highs in Q1, okay, and is up about 10% year to date. Well, you know, they're saying it's broad-based. Well, it is pretty much. It's definitely much more broad-based. All 11 S&P 500 sectors have risen on a year-to-date basis, except for real estate, the real estate stocks. And, of course, they're struggling still with high interest rates on that 30-year mortgage, which has slowed down the real estate transactions quite a bit. And now, of course, we're looking ahead to rate cuts sometime later this year. I don't think the second quarter of this year will resemble much of the first quarter. Definitely not going to be as strong. Things are going to cool off quite a bit. But, as always, you know, different sector rotation takes place. I'm seeing a sector rotation taking place. I would say the most lively sectors here over the last several weeks have been, number one, energy, the energy sector, the oil and gas stocks. Number two would probably be the infrastructure stocks. And number three would probably be, well, either the financials or the industrials, the machinery, Caterpillar, things like that. Okay, this is the Best Stocks Now show. We'll talk a little bit more about what we expect in the second quarter of this year when we come back. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Now, besides the sectors that I've seen kind of heating up here over the last few weeks, I would just say, you know, the market may be getting a little bit more defensive, moving a little bit more towards cyclicals. And at the same time, we have seen, Barry, a stalling out in the AI stocks, which began about 3 weeks ago. When NVIDIA finally cracked, NVIDIA had been just going up parabolically day after day after day after day. Right before they had their big conference, it started to finally see a little bit of profit taking, and now it has leveled off. There's no question about it. So that's a big change from the first quarter of this year. And then you can look at to all the ancillary stocks that surround NVIDIA, such as Arista Networks, AMD, Microsoft. Yes, SMCI.
And it's Broadcom.
Broadcom. Now, they could take off again, but, you know, they, like I say, they have a very strong headwind in valuation. Now, I think those stocks are eventually going to go higher. I don't think you've seen the all-time high in NVIDIA.
Well, of course, you mentioned just yesterday what I think NVIDIA is, what, the third best performer or something in the S&P 500?
Number one.
Yeah, it was number one. Yeah. Well,
and I think, maybe SMCI has done better, but those two stocks have really been burning up the track during the first quarter of this year. And look, my five-year valuations are much higher than where those stocks are today, but that doesn't mean they can't correct by a pretty good. You could see a 25% correction in those stocks, which would be hard to sit through and watch. But
you get we call it a conviction level, right?
It's yeah.
Like, you've got your valuation on it, but then at the same time, right, how much, you know, what's the your conviction level, right, say to add money back to, you know, to NVIDIA right at this particular moment in time and in the chart. And it's it's a tough proposition, even though the long term, right, looks rosy.
Yeah. And so anyways, that's what we're seeing in the market right now. Protecting big profits would be a big strategy for this quarter. I definitely have my work cut out for me in the second quarter. It's not going to be like in autopilot, pretty much like it was in the first quarter of this year. Speaking of autopilot, major U.S. automakers are expected to see only minimal impact from the Baltimore port disruption. Now, I've heard different things. Mm-hmm. I've heard that a lot of goods, that's a pretty important supply chain route that is going to be interrupted for years. You don't just build a bridge like that overnight.
Well, forget the name of the I think it's a coal producer or a coal, someone in the coal business, but, you know, their terminal happens to be right next to, you know, close to the bridge, right? And so they're, you know, obviously operations are disrupted, and their stock was, you know, taking a hit, as you would imagine, yesterday. So, you know, the ancillary, there are certain, you know, pieces, right, of the supply chain and certain pieces of industry that are being, you know, affected, at least on the stock chart, right?
A lot of it has to do with fuel and
coal. I guess it's a place where coal leaves, here to go elsewhere. That's a kind of a big thing. And I think they do, I want to say, do they import some cars? I think there's like
there's a big car hub there.
Okay, yeah.
And so we've already announced that we're going to replace our bridge, the Holt Bridge, over the Cooper River to help pick up the slack. It's going to really put a bigger part of the cargo flow into our port here. And then there's been talk. I listened to a few theories. I try to gather as much news as I possibly can. I feel like the more information you have and gather, the better the decisions you can make. But I have heard theories of possible sabotage that steered that boat. And I thought about my own little, you know, I go out on autopilot, and I can plan a course, and my boat will go by GPS, you know, through the harbor, which we have a lot of turns in our harbor. It's not a straight shot out to the harbor from where I am. And it is possible. I've heard that GPS is pretty easy to override. Okay,
I thought of a hacking incident immediately, but I did see where you had. I guess this boat has had a propulsion problem before. So I think in Antwerp somewhere.
Right,
but you know, who knows? That could have been what's practice and bump it into this thing. But
well, they're claiming they lost propulsion. And just the inertia, when you got a boat that big with all of that weight on it, it carried it right in. But,
yeah,
I mean, it just happened.
It. Yeah,
what are the odds?
It's going to go where it goes.
What are the odds that it just happens to hit the exact, I mean, it was the perfect strike to
and
just take it down in, like, dominoes, right?
Yeah, and I think somebody who's on that bridge project, admitted that that's the weakest point of the bridge.
Yeah,
right. And so,
a coincidence!
Yeah, coincidence or not, right? One way or the other,
it's down.
An issue. I've never even thought of one hitting the bridge as I've driven over right here. I drive over and I just look over like, oh yeah, that's cool. Neat, but
you're pretty vulnerable up there.
I guess so.
Well, Sam Bankman-Fried finds out how much time he'll spend in prison. He's going to get his sentence today, supposedly. In the meantime, speaking of hacking, the U.S. State Department's announcing a $10 million reward for Black Cat Ransomware Group out of Russia, who took down United Healthcare, which has been a really, that kind of just gets buried under all the other headlines out there. But that was a very detrimental and costly cyber attack, which really crippled our healthcare system for a while. The Dow Jones says that GE, GE's hitting new all-time highs again. I saw that yesterday. I keep a little journal of charts on a daily basis, and a GE. Oh, I would add one other sector that's just been on fire recently, the insurance stocks, which we own two or three. I think we own three. That's another sector. But GE is spinning off their medical group, Vernova. It's going to go into the S&P 500 on day one, replacing Dentsply Sirona. So we'll have a new member of the S&P 500. Now, when we come back, there's a couple of big gainers in the biotech sector, and Bernie Sanders is coming for Novo Nordisk. Well, Bernie, you could lose a few pounds. You ought to try it. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show. And welcome back here to the second quarter of today's, or second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, we talked earlier this week, the stock of the day earlier in the week was Trump's stock, DJT. How about a stock today that was 20 million in market cap yesterday, 20 million, and today it's hitting 120 million, or 2 days ago it was 20 million. Now it's 120 million in market cap. It's up 427% today. And, here's your, medical school terminology of the day. Hidradenitis suppurativa. Now, wait till you see the commercials for this on TV. Do you have hidradenitis suppurativa? It's a chronic or long-lasting inflammatory skin condition. When you have HS, I like that better, HS, your immune system is believed to be overactive and produces too much of a certain inflammatory molecule, like IL-17A. Too much IL-17A is thought to contribute to excess inflammation in your body and may lead to HS symptoms like bumps and abscesses that can hurt. Well, this little company bought a private company that thinks they have the cure for this. It was a drug that was initially developed by Lilly, and I guess they spun it off to somebody else. The name of the stock, Avalo Therapeutics, A-V-A-L-O, symbol A-V-T-X, headquartered in Rockville, Maryland. It's up 431% today, A-V-T-X.
Wow.
So there's your stock of the day.
Turn in your lottery ticket on that one.
I guess I got to add it to the Best Stocks Now app. I'm going to make a note to myself here. There we go. AVTX will be added to the app. I'm always adding a few every day that pop up that I don't have in there. Senator Sanders, otherwise known as Bernie, goes after Novo Nordisk on a study on Ozempic's low manufacturer cost. Well, you know... I've seen this story before, or situations like this. How much does it cost to develop the drug?
It depends on what cost you're including. If you're talking about to manufacture it maybe now going forward, right? But like you said, it's what are the developmental costs? That's why you have accounting rules and you assign R&D cost, right, to actual projects.
Well, he's saying that they produce the drug for about $5 a month. And, the cost is about $1,000 a month. But I just don't think that is very good logical sense there by Bernie. That after all these scientists and all these years of clinical research, that all adds up, okay? And if you don't come up with the drug, they eat it. And if they do come up with something, well, they've got to space that out and put the cost of all of the research. It has very little to do with how much it costs to create the drug itself. But anyways, Bernie Sanders...
And there's a public good component, too, right, in terms of, public good for, if it's a weight loss drug now, right, and it improves... other cost structures, right, for Medicare or something of that nature, right, and improves people's lives, then, there's a piece to that, too. And how do you capping it, right? There's a fine line between, encouraging someone to go for it, to try to make a profit, right? And, of course, you know, price gouging.
Right? Well, that's right. And he also makes the argument that it's $155 a month in Canada and $1,000 a month in the U.S. Well, that doesn't make much sense.
Well, you could name, and you could name almost every drug, right? And that would be true. It's deeper than just one particular drug.
It's complicated. Ford eliminating more jobs at its Dearborn. We were just there not that long ago, right? We weren't in Dearborn, but we were in Bloomfield Hills. The F-150 Lightning plant, which is the electric version of the F-150, there are slashing hourly workforce as the demand for electric vehicles continues to slow down and drop. Of the 2,100 remaining employees at the Rouge Electric Vehicle Center, 700 will be transferred to the Michigan Assembly plant that makes the Bronco and Ranger, and a third crew, 700, will remain at the F-150 plant, while the other, they're cutting 2,100 workers down to 700. The rest of the workers will be offered a $50K retirement package or take reassignment elsewhere in Michigan. We've just seen nothing but bad news. I read that if you want a Fisker, they're having a fire sale on Fisker, pardon the pun, to get rid of their inventory and so that they have money to survive.
I just like I said, I told you the story about, you know, seeing them, you know, at a tent, like at an outdoor mall around here, and then, you know, literally the next week, right, you were reading stories about, you know, bankruptcy, and I'm thinking, man, just from a disruption, you know, whether it's their employees or, you know, their customers, I'm still interested to see how this plays out long term.
Yeah.
For someone who's made an investment, really, right, into a particular technology, that being that car, and tune-ups in that electric car world, or updates to your software, and if there's no other company to do a software update, does it ever happen again?
And Ford has to do this to match demand with supply. And right now they've got way more supply building than there is demand, which demand is much slower than the industry expected when it comes to EVs. I haven't heard from GM recently, but, I mean, they're all in to be 100% EV at some point in time. Now, we've always wondered what Home Depot was going to do. Where can you put another Home Depot? Well, they're buying a specialty distributor. That's a pretty big deal, $18.2 billion.
Wow.
So this will give them quite a few locations. Let's see, it's in 47 states. 760 branches.
Is it an equipment lease company or something?
No, it's a distributor, SRS Distribution, which distributes building goods. So
adding to their supply chain.
Yeah, so they're adding distribution to their customers and whatnot. So, you know, I mean, look, Home Depot, we talked about it. They've come down to a 1% to 2% grower. They've entered into that Johnson & Johnson and Kimberly-Clark phase of their life cycle. But they're going to try to amp up a little growth by doing this. Then Walgreens, which was just taken out of the Dow and replaced by Amazon, which was a very good move. It should have been done a long time ago. Man, that stock, well, it's up a little bit now, but they're warning about a challenging economy. It's always funny how when the bad companies have a bad report, they blame the economy, and yet all the economists are saying it's a soft landing, the economy's still strong, the jobs market is still strong, but you got to blame something when things don't go well. They had very little growth in their latest quarter. It just seems to me like there's a Walgreens or a CVS. It's a crowded crowded industry. How many Walgreens and CVSs do we have in our neighborhood? Seems like there's a heck of a lot of them.
I mean, there's and they're close to each other. If you there's a couple of corners where, you know, depending on where the egress and what the is, right? It's probably better just to walk. I mean, you'd be on one corner. You could just, if you didn't have what you want, just instead of driving across the street, just walk across the street because CVS is real close.
Yeah. Okay, and the last one here is Restoration Hardware. There's very few earnings reports trickling in right now. I updated in my newsletter on last Friday, what the expectations are for the quarter that is ending today. So when these companies start reporting in 2 weeks, a little under 2 weeks, it's based on the past 90 days, which we just finished. And, you know, I was thinking last night, is 90 days, I remember Trump wanted to make it twice a year that they report earnings, but, you know, I think it's kind of good that we get a quarterly look at these companies. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show on this. Really, it's the last day of
final
the quarter.
Final segment of the quarter.
And, this is it.
Interesting. Yeah, it's crazy. And
tomorrow the market is closed.
And Easter Sunday, Easter weekend this weekend.
So. We come back on Monday. We begin a new quarter. And we'll see if the same trends, they've definitely changed here over the last 2 or 3 weeks to more defensive. It was go, 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 go for several weeks there. And
just
it was,
shot out of, just the market just shot out of a cannon.
Yeah.
This, you know, the first week was a little slow, remember, of the quarter. And then after that, it's been a.
Yep.
Been a sprint. It's like a marathon where they're sprinting at the end. You know,
it looked like it was going to spread out even more at the beginning of, because the money was so concentrated towards the end of last year in those fabulous seven, and it has. I mean, we're right. We said that the money's going to spread out. The advance is going to spread out,
and so, it wanted to. it did everything it could. The only difference is that. A name like NVIDIA continued to.
I was just going to say that. The others didn't cool off like they did, like they should have. Instead, others joined in and grabbed onto their coattails, and they led the market. ASM Lithography, NVIDIA, Broadcom, AMD, Arista Networks, and now they have all cooled off. That's the one big change I've seen in the last 2 or 3 weeks. And expanding out to energy, industrials, infrastructure, insurance, well, you know, look, more boring type stock cyclicals, which aren't going to give you the kinds of returns that we saw in the first quarter of this year. So, you know, that's just one trend that I've seen developing here. Now, whether it dominates in the fourth quarter or not, we'll see. I take it a day at a time. We've lightened up a little bit in the leadership type stocks, but at the same time,
you kind of took your foot off the gas, right?
A little bit.
I mean, that's really what and standing guard for some of the embedded gains that we've already created. You know, that we've already created.
And really and truly, this whole thing began in January the previous year, in 2023, when we said the NASDAQ has bottomed here. And you know, I was amazed at how many long-term capital gains we have.
Well, I mean, this whole cycle is kind of it's neat now to see how it's kind of elongated, right? And when I started seeing it, you know, so many names getting closer and closer, and now, of course, hitting and well into them, some of the long term capital gain status. It was, you know, just kind of goes to show how long this particular investment cycle, right, has continued to play out, no matter how many times it's been counted out at the same time.
But I do think it's transitioning somewhat here, and have to really be on our toes here. Okay,
you can't fight the tape, right?
No,
you can't fight the tape at the same. But at the same time, you can stand guard, and like you said,
you got to lighten up in some areas,
taking your foot off the gas,
and just the math of it all. If you have some huge long term capital gains, that they're also represent big parts of your portfolios, and that's part of money management, is taking some risk off the table, not being too concentrated, and at the same time not being too dilutive, owning 5,000 stocks and things like that. Okay, Intel's up 1.4. That's the biggest winner in the Dow today. Disney is breaking out. I think Disney kind of put to bed their troubles with the activist investors. They also settled with DeSantis down in Florida. So maybe they've got their obstacles out of the way.
Oh, they did. I missed that piece.
Yeah, okay. They settled that. So Disney's taken off. What can I say? That's been a very good chart here recently. And Amazon is also up today in the Dow. And at the same time, the loser is in the Dow today. Let's see. Apple. Apple's had a terrible quarter. It's amazing how bad Apple and Tesla have performed. And, you know, look, we sold them a long time ago. I didn't like the way they were trading. I didn't like the way they didn't have any catalyst. If it's true for Ford, the F-150 just doesn't see the demand, Tesla's got to be suffering, too, from a lower demand for EVs.
Well, and both companies are kind of directly in the crossfire, right, for Chinese intervention, right, in terms of both of those companies have a good bit of exposure in China, sell to China. You start beginning to curb. You know, they've already curbed, right? At least in part of the iPhone, right?
China's got competitors to Apple and Tesla now.
Yeah, Boyd, you would think electric cars would be the next, especially if we're not going to allow their cars here.
BYDDF surpassed Tesla as the world's biggest EV seller. So, anyways, those. They've been affected mightily by what's going on. And I saw China was wagging a finger at ASM Lithography out of the Netherlands, saying, well, if we can't have your technology, that you can't stop us. In other words, I guess we'll copy yours
copy
or whatever, something.
They know a little bit about reverse engineering.
Yes. So. Okay. Now, if we look at the S&P 500 here today, Estee Lauder, the big winner, it had a tough quarter. It's up 5.6% today.
Does that mean our Elf is having a decent day? Or
Elf was one of the biggest winners. And, you know, I was looking, the Russell 2000, it was having a good day the other day. There's still stocks in the Russell 2000 that have gone way beyond, like SMCI, which is now in the S&P. It's still in the Russell 2000 ETF.
They can't get rid of it at all.
Elf is in the Russell 2000 ETF, and
that's
a couple other.
I was just looking at that chart. It's a nice chart.
So that you've got about 10 stocks driving the Russell 2000 small cap index. Okay, and the S&P 500, I really don't see anything here. Carnival's down 3.5%. They warned. I guess they used that Baltimore port. They're not going to be able to get through there with their ships. Okay, we're out of time. I've been sending out the newsletter, hopefully tomorrow, to get 2 free weeks, 855-611-BESS or GundersonCapital.com to set up an appointment with us, 855-611-BESS. Have a great weekend, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.